this. A recording studio somewhere far, far away.
Now, I should say at the start that this is a comedy show. If any of you is seen not laughing, as you go out, a man puts a sticker on your back that says, I am Salman Rushdie. So more of that later, but now it's Punt and Dennis. This week on the Gatwick Departure Lounge Experience, we once again put the record straight on a matter of major public concern. This week, we say unequivocally, flying is safe. Fact. The number of reported near misses in the air is increasing, and the air traffic is at saturation level. The conclusion? Flying is safe. Fact. 2 months ago, a number of new Boeing 737s were taken out of service because their engines fell to bits if operated at full power. The conclusion? Flying is safe. Fact. The new Minister of Transport is Cecil Parkinson. The conclusion? Flying is safe,
but always wear a condom.
Many airlines offer regular scheduled services to the Channel Islands and the Isle of Man with no questions asked. The conclusion? Ken Dodd is innocent.
There is no doubt that in terms of sheer weight of numbers, we are approaching crisis point. At any one time, there are far more people in the sky than there are watching sky, although obviously that's not really saying much. At peak times, there are quite simply too many planes.
It's the job of air traffic control to find takeoff slots for all the flights trying to leave Gatwick. There is, of course, a sophisticated system for doing this.
It dips, sky blue, who's it not you? God's word is true, it must be... Oh, bloody hell, it's come out down here again.
Until the air traffic situation is sorted out, it seems that the British are doomed to sit around for hours and hours waiting for permission to take off. Is this the spirit that won the Battle of Britain?
It's Biffo! I thought he'd bought it over Bremen. Come in, Biffo!
Thank God! Biggin, I've taken a lot of flak over the briny. Tail shot to pieces, ginger the corner, and we're flying on one engine. We're just about out of fuel, and I think we can just make it.
Well, I'm sorry to hear about all that, Biffo. Now, can you divert to Prestwick, do you think?
There are, of course, some exceptions to the rule. Certain people who fly regularly are always given preferential treatment.
Come in, Flight 302. I'm afraid there's no available slot at Heathrow. Please stack at 30,000 feet. Over.
My husband and I wish to land immediately. We've just had 3 weeks of ghastly foreigners forcing us to watch their silly dancing, and we've flown back via Ascension Island because Philip is such a crap pilot.
Roger. All right, Mom. You're clear to land. And Prince Edward is waiting to meet you at the airport.
Philip, we're diverting to Manchester.
Hello, I'm Nick Hancock, and I'm just going to start off by telling you a little bit about myself, if you don't know me. I'm a very lucky person. Good things happen to me all the time. On Tuesday, a bloke just came up to me in the street and offered me a job. I'd never even met him before. And what this bloke did for a living was, he's the guy who writes the little stickers that go in the back windows of cars. You must have seen them. Very funny they are. And what he said to me was, I'll tell you what I usually do with my new people, Nick. I give them a blank piece of paper and a pen, and I just see what they can come up with. He said, I'll tell you what, mate, why don't you write us something about windsurfers, okay? Windsurfers and what they do. And I thought, all right. So I came up with, windsurfers go windsurfing. And the other one I came up with, which I was rather proud of, was, don't follow me, or you'll end up at my house. Anyway, quite soon after that, I actually gave up the job. That It wasn't because I didn't like it. It's just that I'm incredibly lazy and I hate working. In fact, I've just had a book published, which I'm rather proud of. It's called The A to Z of Apathy. A is for... Oh, bollocks to this. And I was actually expelled from school at 7 years of age. I was expelled from school at seven for pissing in the school swimming pool. Which I thought was a bit harsh, because at seven, everybody pisses in the swimming pool, don't they? The thing was, I did it from the top diving board. But I still thought it was unfair, because I got it all in. I didn't spill any round the edges or anything like that. In the swimming bath, you get no petting. That really annoys me, when I just fancied a good pet. And I don't think it's fair, because you don't get no swimming signs in nightclubs, do you? People annoy me when they can't communicate properly, and most people can't, because you go up to somebody in the street and you say, "Excuse me, mate, can you tell me where Hudson Street is, please?" And they say, "I'm sorry, I haven't got a clue." What good's a clue to me? It's no good to me if you say, "My thirst is in fish, but not in sea." That's crap. I want to know where Hudson Street is. And the people who really piss me off are the people who use the phrase, "You have to laugh, or else you'll cry." Because that's bollocks, isn't it? And when people say that to me, I make a point of going up to them and neither laughing nor crying. I actually like to try and think up my own sayings, which I hope are more accurate. For instance, I was in a place called Dudley last weekend, and I was thinking, while I was in Dudley, it's in the West Midlands if you don't know it, of the saying, "People who live in glass houses shouldn't throw stones," right? And I thought of one a little bit like that for Dudley, which is, "People who live in Dudley shouldn't." Dudley, have no imagination. Dudley is actually twinned with a town a mile and a half away called Sandwell. And they've got signs on the way into Dudley that says, "Dudley welcomes careful drivers." Well, who's that for? If you're a careful driver, you'd be careful to avoid going through Dudley, wouldn't you?
If it's the 2001 theme, it must be an in-depth documentary about space. But 20 incredibly expensive years after the first man stepped on the moon, what in fact have been the gains of space exploration?
Well, firstly, of course, dust. Dust brought back from the moon has been extensively analysed and discovered to be dust.
Basically, space is crap. It's nothing like what we learned to expect from the television.
Okay, Spock, check off. The Federation has given us our mission. I want you to take a party of armed men, beam down to the planet, collect a piece of rock, come back here and have a look at it. The whole thing should cost about $150 million.
That sounds illogical, Captain.
Not as illogical as leaving this incredibly successful series for a part in T.J. Hooker.
The exploration of the moon has also provided us with one of the funniest names in history. Buzz Aldrin, which for sheer intergalactic silliness must rank with Tony Gubba, Ndaba Ningi Sitoli, and Freddie Parrotface Davis.
Why on earth did his parents name him Buzz? We spoke to his father, Ding Dong Aldrin.
Yeah, it's actually pronounced Buzz.
What, Buzz?
No, Ding Dong.
In the early 60s, everyone thought that the first space launch was simply a two-horse race between Russia and America. So it must have been a terrible shock to them both when they were pipped to the post by a monkey. The problem with sending a monkey soon emerged when Bonzo met an intelligent life form from the planet Zanussi. The representatives of that planet are now convinced that most inhabitants of Earth spend all their time screeching, throwing food around and showing off their arse, and have therefore concluded that the planet is entirely made up of young conservatives.
Now, the Americans have always claimed that none of the monkeys sent into space suffered any strange effects. But here is a recording made by Mission Control in 1965.
Hello, this is Mission Control Houston. We seem to be picking up some transmissions from inside the monkey cabin.
Now this week, for the first time in the history of the space age, they are appointing a British astronaut. This must be the biggest mistake in travel since the appointment of Paul Channon.
Hello, come in, Brit One. Can you read me over?
Here we go, here we go, here we go.
Many distinguished Britons applied for the job, but not all of them got past the starting post.
Okay, Mr. Ross, what's the problem?
I'm afraid I don't like the suit.
Okay, next.
Oh, well, I like their clothes.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Ross. Now, Mr. Davis, if you'd like to read the countdown.
10, 9, 8. That's 5 pages to this week's number 8.
Yeah, next.
Yes, indeed. Space, very interesting, but a space I'm really interested in, ladies and gentlemen, is the space between George Bush's ears.
Yeah, next.
So the final conclusion must be this. All in all, we think the theme tune of the space age should go a bit more like this.
Napoleon. At last the words I searched for came, and they were on my own. I grabbed my pen, a ballpen tell, and soon my textbook read, Europe since Napoleon. Solo. Soon after I was hard at work on other major titles. St. Joan became Ian St. Joan. I could just squeeze in and Greasy. I turned Jane Eyre to Dan Eyre, Kes to Des, and Nicholas Nickleby to Nicholas Penning, cause he was in my class. Annie, AJP Taylor, AJPPY. I turned Mansfield Park into Mungo Jerry. I never worked out why, though I never touched Howard's End. I was finally expelled for writing letters after Longman's audio-visual French. And now I sit here with that same old ballpen tell before me. I open that brown envelope and the same old instinct burns in the little box where it says, name, I want to write that tune. What that does to my income tax return.
Good evening, Donna MacPhail here. I had to catch a bus to get here this evening because my car wouldn't start. Oh, I can't understand it. I've broken down now twice on the motorway in the last month. Although, actually, that's nothing to do with the car. I've got personal problems. Thank you. But I get so lazy now I've got a car. I don't go anywhere unless I go in my car. I even used to park my car right outside my front door until the lift broke down. I've become so unfit these days, I've developed a severe case of TDB. That's taxi driver's bottom. No, really, if I took measurements of my buttocks and thighs at this point, I could make up a brilliant pattern for a pair of jodhpurs. The bus, the walk on the bus, which is actually a very funny Swedish joke. Now, the walk to the bus stop tonight nearly killed me. I've got to get my car fixed. I can't understand what's wrong with it. It used to be so reliable. I've done 85,000 miles in that car, and I haven't had to change the oil once. And I passed my driving test in that car. I'm so fond of it. I passed my driving test first time. I thought I'd failed immediately, because the instructor asked me to do the hardest manoeuvre first. You know, the one where you have to get the cassette tape out of the glove compartment while going round a roundabout? Totally screwed it up, spilt the joint I'd been rolling on my lap. It just went all over the place. But a good thing about having a car is that you get the opportunity to go places you've never been to before. Like Quick Fit. Magistrates Court. And actually went to a breaker's yard for the first time the other week. That was an experience. I don't know anything about cars. And I tell you, if I did know anything about cars, I'd never let on to a mechanic about it. Because it spoils the fun. See, the way I see it, women are in a catch-22 situation when it comes to garages. Because if you don't know anything about cars, you're stupid. If you do know something about cars, you're a lesbian. And if you're a lesbian who doesn't know anything about cars, well, you're a disgrace to the movement. I went up to the man in the breaker's yard. I was asking his advice about this distributor, and he's been particularly unhelpful. He was talking to me in all this technological garbage. I didn't know what he was talking about. He was going, well, darling, depends what model car you got, doesn't it? What is it, 4-cylinder, 5-cylinder, what is it? So I just looked at him and I said, well, it's orange. I tell you, within half an hour, I'd found the part and fitted it in my car for free. Ha ha, sucker!
This week marks the 20th anniversary of the beginning of what is called the Troubles in Northern Ireland. Calling it the Troubles is, of course, just one of the British media's ways of making what is actually a war sound like a domestic squabble. Some historians arbitrarily date the war from the potato famine of 1841, during which time the Irish people were enraged by the incomprehension of English aristocrats.
Well, perhaps there are no potatoes, but, you know, have they never heard of pasta? Or tzatziki. I mean, get me over there and I'll whip up a light moussaka.
But of course, the English aristocrats were not taking into account the peculiarities of the Irish diet. Sometimes it wasn't so easy choosing what to eat.
One potato, two potato, three potatoes. Haven't you got anything else on the menu?
But what really upset the Irish at the height of the potato famine was the callous opening in London in 1893 of the first ever Spud You Like.
So there's the history sorted out. Now, in the present day, amongst the blind passion and extreme opinion, one still small voice of calm is Ian Paisley's.
We all know about Ian Paisley as a campaigner, but what I want to know is, how does the Reverend conduct his ordinary pastoral care?
Ah, that must be the vicar, Noy.
Hello, Mrs. Williams! I was deeply saddened to hear about the death of your neighbour.
Yes, well, we all liked old Mr. Dalton.
Because I was hoping to get the boot in before he died, the dirty, fenian bastard. Now, can I have some tea and biscuits?
Most of our own attitudes to Northern Ireland have been conditioned by the British press, where the subject still commands attention at every editorial meeting.
Right, tomorrow's possible stories, Max Bygraves having his wisdom teeth out, Princess Di bends over, and 27 people have been killed in Londonderry.
Much as I hate giving the bastards publicity, we're going to have to give it a front page. How about this for a headline? Oi, lads, look, you can see her bum.
Like it.
In recent years, though, the British press have had something to cheer about in Northern Ireland with the exploits of the SAS. It is, of course, impossible to criticise the role of the SAS in the Irish problem, as the SAS are the last vestige of British pride. We may have lost an empire, a manufacturing industry, and every single round of Je Sans Frontières, but we do have these eight blokes who are really quite hard.
The mythology of the SAS has an emotional hold on the British masculine imagination. Although the SAS is basically just a group of punctual Millwall fans, The average British male is convinced that they are made up entirely of milk tray men.
But back to the problem of Northern Ireland. At the moment, a lot of hope is resting on the Anglo-Irish Agreement. But in fact, this hope is rather misplaced, as all the Anglo-Irish Agreement actually says is Johnny Logan is crap. Is that any last hope of Irish accord with Britain has been scuppered by the BBC's employment of this man, by which they are clearly taking the piss.
There was uproar in the House of Commons today as a shouting lunatic was forcibly evicted from the public gallery. It was me. Truth out. Good night.
And now, the Salman Rushdie gigantic royalty check experience.
Mr. Rushdie, Penguin Books here. We've got your first royalties through four satanic verses. It's over £1 million. What would you like us to do with it?
Can you send it to me?
Certainly. What address?
Yes, perhaps it would be better if I came to collect it.
No, don't do that. It's an awfully long way here for you, and anyway, there won't be anyone here because we're all on holiday. Everyone's on holiday for a long time. Look, why don't we just pay it into a bank?
Come in, Mr. Rusty. Look, I have all this money and no one will take it off my hands. There's only one thing for it. I'd like a new kind of bank account.
New kind of bank account.
Yes, one where I've got lots of money, but no one can trace it to me.
We've got the very thing, sir. It's called the Dodd account. That's three D's. No interest charges, none of those acerbic letters. You just take it all home and shove the lot into your mattress. Piss off, Rushdie.
Now it's time for the punchline competition. What's happened is, before the show, the studio audience has written a punchline to the following joke. Mary Whitehouse has this week admitted to having an affair when she was 21. What did the man use as a chat-up line? So here we go. What did the man use as a chat-up line? Hello, doll. Guess what? We've got something in common. I'm a subscription holder to a magazine with your surname. Now, you see, only the men are laughing at this point, right? And that is because that's a reference to a magazine called White House, which, as far as I know, is a train-spotting magazine. Have you seen my blind dog? And that's from Big Bum, who I can only presume is 3 years old. What did the man use as a chat-up line? I've just called to mend the TV. It's not really a chat-up line, is it? But never mind. How do you like your eggs? Unfertilized? Oh, dear. Robert Chapman's obviously a bit handy with the girls, isn't he, really? You don't sweat much for a fat girl. That's from Linda Chapman, but it's stolen from Viz, so I'm sorry, it's not on. Bloke, do you sleep on your stomach? MW, no. Bloke, well, can I?
And now, episode 2 of our interactive audience participatory Dungeons and Dragons fantasy experience. In last week's instalment, our audience participator, Jim the Troll, successfully fought his way through the dark forest and beheaded the venom monster of Snarge, only to let himself down rather badly by getting himself eaten by a children's TV personality.
Right, now, last week we were a bit unfair because we picked out somebody at random, so this week we thought we'd get a volunteer. What's your name? No, we actually need a woman for this, so what's your name?
Ethel.
All right, from now on, Ethel, you are Mondrak, the evil sorceress, okay? Could you just come up here a minute, Mondrak? Could you just say into that microphone, I am Mondrak, the evil sorceress?
I am Mondrak, the evil sorceress!
Okay, okay, that was a bit crap. Could you try it again? A bit more evil, a bit louder. Just try it one more time. Well, that's very good. If you just say sorceress, we'll be well away. Sorceress. Right. Okay. The way we go, stay there. The way we go is up to you. Nick, over here, is going to be our hero, and Mondrak, the evil sorceress, will try and stop him from achieving his quest.
Nick sets out down the great road towards the mountains of Grondor, knowing that there he could meet certain doom. If he puts a foot wrong, for there dwell terrifying death hawks, which attack the unwary completely at random. But he is well protected, carrying with him the sword of Randall.
Randall's sword.
The shield of Krondor.
Krondor's shield.
And the axe of Nopalt.
Nopalt's axe.
And of course, in his pocket, he always carries a condom.
Nick enters the great forest of shadows and realizes he is lost. He must ask the way. But of whom? Wait. Hopping out from behind a gnarled tree stump in front of him is one of the little people.
And the producer said to me, Ronnie. He said to me, Ronnie, as he does. Ronnie.
Excuse me,
he asks.
But which way to the gatehouse of peril? Left or right?
But before Ronnie could answer, his mind was filled with telepathic waves from Mondrak the Evil One, sending a wrong answer into his brain, an answer which will send our hero to certain...
Doom. Mondrak said...
I'm Mondrak!
No. We know that, Ethel. What we don't know is which way Nick has to go. And you have two choices here. I don't know if you know that. Have a go. Go on.
Turn left at the lights, love.
Turn left at the lights, love. Well, that wasn't very evil. All right. Turn left. Try and say it a bit more like you did before. Yeah, I knew it was beginner's luck before. All right. Okay, anyway, Mondrak's evil thoughts came out of Ronnie's mouth, and Nick turns left at the lights, love, only to find himself face to face with the feared, the hideous, three-headed Savile monster.
Now then. It just happens.
There is only one escape from the Savile monster. Nick must answer the riddle correctly.
Very well. What is the riddle?
As it happens, just around the corner of your mind, 14 years ago, what was the number one sound?
Right. So what was it, sir?
Joys of Seasons.
Joys of Seasons? That's a hymn book, isn't it? Tell us what it was, three-headed Savile monster.
Well, David, as it happens, it was none other than the very wonderful Bear City Rollers and Give a Little Love.
Huh? Right. Well, for not getting that one, you lot, you have to face one of the most hideous ordeals yet. You have to hear some of it.
No! It's too much. Kill me and save these unfortunate peasants.
Well, for that noble gesture, Nick has narrowly survived. Now he must quickly find his way out of the forest before darkness falls. To make his way out, he must follow the incantation, which will be set for him once someone has completed the rhyme. To leave the forest and find your path, turn round twice and... Incredible ventriloquism, sir.
And so our hero gets to turn around twice and kiss his ass. Living to fight another day, but Mondrak has him in her sights and lets out her diabolical laugh. Fairly diabolical if you are Huey, Dewey or Louie. Next week, our hero must find his way into the Krog Fortress of Eternal Despair just outside Reading. Till then, goodbye.
White House Experience. It was written and performed by David Baddiel, Rob Newman, Steve Punky, Dennis, Dick Hancock, Donna McPhail, and Tim Firth. The production assistant was Viv Drew, the sound was by Roger Daines, and the producer was Harry Thompson.